Airlines share their plans to deal with DOT's tarmac rule, NTSB rules, and that Learjet overrun in South Carolina. And we're taking you inside AEA 2010 with streaming video today. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, April 8th, 2010. The Aero News and Aero TV teams are in Kissimmee, Florida today, south of Orlando, for the Aircraft Electronics Association's 53rd Annual International Convention and Trade Show at the Gaylord Palms. And we're doing something different for this show from anything we've done before. We've partnered with AEA to bring you live streaming video coverage of the new product introduction event from the hotel ballroom at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time today, and news and interviews from the floor of the show on Friday and Saturday. To access the stream when live content is available, click the banner at the top of the main page at aero-news.net. We'll appreciate your feedback on how things looked at your end when it's over. We'll have more details about the project with Aero TV's Sarah Curtis on today's Aero News special feature. April 29th may see significant changes in how airlines attempt to handle long tarmac delays, which strand passengers without providing for basic human needs. That's the day the U.S. Department of Transportation's new three-hour limit goes into effect, providing for fines of up to $27,500 per passenger if customers are stranded on a parked plane for more than 3 hours. Continental Airlines and U.S. Airways both say they've implemented new policies ahead of the deadline. There are exceptions in both airlines' policies for safety and other issues, but it's not yet clear how often they might be used. Syracuse.com reports that U.S. Airways told employees in an internal newsletter, quote, "If a plane is out on the taxiway for 2.5 hours and takeoff isn't imminent, the pilots will make an announcement and return to the gate," unquote. The airline said it expects more canceled flights as crews exceed flight time rules. Continental says if a plane does not expect to take off before the deadline passes, pilots are directed to, quote, "reposition the aircraft at either a remote area or a gate where customers may deplane safely and securely," unquote. Continental CEO Jeff Smisek has also warned of more flight cancellations. Several of the major carriers have requested exemptions in the rule for airports in the New York area, particularly when JFK's Bay runway closes for reconstruction this fall. The DOT is collecting comments on those potential waivers through tomorrow. Get more background in my interview with Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org on the Aero News special feature dated Tuesday, April 6th. Following a meeting that was open to the public Tuesday in Washington, D.C., the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board released a report concluding that a rechartered business jet crashed at Columbia, South Carolina on takeoff 18 months ago because of the operator's inadequate maintenance of the airplane's tires and a decision by the captain to attempt to abort a takeoff at high speed, which went against standard operating procedures and training. On September 19, 2008, the Learjet Model 60 overran the departure end of runway 11, struck airport lights, crashed through a perimeter fence, crossed a roadway, and came to rest on a berm. The captain, first officer, and two passengers were killed. Two other passengers were seriously injured. The investigation revealed that prior to the accident, the aircraft was operated while the main landing gear tires were severely underinflated because of inadequate maintenance by the operator, Global Exec Aviation. The underinflation led to the failure of all four of the airplane's main landing gear tires during the takeoff roll. Despite having passed minimum rotation speed and the suspicion that the tires were compromised, the captain overruled the first officer, who wanted to get the Lear off the ground, and deployed the airplane's thrust reversers. But the tire failure had damaged a sensor, which caused the thrust reversers to return to the stowed position. While the captain was trying to stop the plane by commanding reverse thrust, forward thrust was being provided at near takeoff power. The safety board determined that the inadvertent forward thrust contributed to the severity of the accident. NTSB Chairman Deborah Herzman commented, quote, "This entirely avoidable crash should reinforce to everyone in the aviation community that there are no small maintenance items, because every time a plane takes off, lives are on the line," unquote. Litigation related to the crash continues, with several lawsuits filed among the survivors, families of the deceased, and other parties. Read the NTSB's specific recommendations in the text version of this story, dated April 7th, at aero-news.net. Up next on ANN, Cirrus drops one of its lawsuits against L3. Florida commits tax dollars to preserving aerospace jobs. and Embry-Riddle gets three new trustees. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800 for Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 8th. I'm Paul Plack. Cirrus Design has dropped a lawsuit it had filed against L3 Communications, which claimed L3 had attempted to convince other suppliers to stop doing business with Cirrus, saying the manufacturer would soon be seeking bankruptcy protection. Cirrus had sought an injunction to prevent L3 from contacting other suppliers and sought damages in excess of $75,000. The Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal reports that U.S. District Judge Patrick Schultz approved the dismissal. This does not affect a separate lawsuit against Cirrus by L3 seeking money it says it's owed, nor the countersuit by Cirrus. The two parties have been told to be ready to bring that one to court in December. As Florida scrambles to hang on to its skilled aerospace workforce past the end of the space shuttle program this fall, the state Senate has passed a jobs bill with an aerospace component. Space investment in the bill includes $10 million for project financing and $3 million for business development to aid the state's ability through Space Florida to attract and expand aerospace businesses. There's also $3.2 million to retrain shuttle program workers who are displaced. The end of the program is expected to directly or indirectly impact 23,000 workers in Florida. Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University's Board of Trustees elected three new members during its March meeting. John Amore is the CEO of the Global General Insurance Division of Zurich Financial Services and a member of its Group Executive Committee. Retired U.S. Air Force General Ron Keyes is a consultant on energy, transportation, and national security issues. And Zane Rowe is the Executive VP and CFO of Continental Airlines. Dr. John P. Johnson, Embry-Riddle president, says the new trustees, quote, bring a wealth of experience and inspired leadership that will help us chart the university's future growth while maintaining our strong tradition of excellence, unquote. Still ahead, DFW awards a $900 million construction contract. Sierra Industries renews its BizJet loaner program. And Evector Aircraft brings us something new and bigger. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, April 8th. I'm Paul Plack. As part of a joint venture team known as BARC, Balfour Beatty Construction has been awarded a $900 million contract for pre-construction and construction services for Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport's seven-year terminal development program. Terminals A, B, C, and E at the airport are about 36 years old, and the airport is seeking to improve efficiency, passenger processing, and aesthetics for all four terminals, and to consolidate concessions areas into villages, similar to the airport's Terminal D. The BARC team will renovate Terminals A and C and build a rail station to connect future routes for Dallas Area Rapid Transit and Fort Worth Transportation Authority. The project scope includes improving roadways and infield parking garages and preparing existing areas for new conveyance systems for baggage handling. Temporary facilities will also be built for occupants of areas that are under renovation. Sierra Industries this month celebrates the first anniversary of its fly-through maintenance program, which offers Cessna Citation owners a service borrowed from premium auto service centers, a loaner while yours is in the shop. In this case, the loaner is often one of Sierra's FJ44 Citations. The program is available for any significant routine maintenance events, such as phase inspections or during aircraft repairs or major upgrades. If Sierra doesn't have one of its own aircraft available, a sister company, Flight Time Business Jets, offers discounted dry lease rates and air charter services for a wide variety of high-performance business aircraft. Apparently, it all pencils out. Sierra just announced the program's being renewed for a second year. eVector, the aircraft manufacturer best known in the U.S. for its light sport aircraft, has just debuted something much bigger. The company calls its EV-55 Outback a new-generation turboprop. Design has reportedly taken 5 years and focused on versatility, utility, and low cost of operation and maintenance. The first flight is planned for the third quarter of this year, and passenger, cargo, and combi versions are planned. The EV-55 is a high-wing twin turboprop, which can be configured to carry 9 to 14 passengers, or up to 4,000 pounds of cargo. The aircraft is designed for operations on short, unpaved runways or at high-altitude airports. eVector says the primary target market for the aircraft is operators in countries like South America, Africa, and Asia, where there is less developed infrastructure. eVector says it hopes the EV-55 Outback will compete with twin-engine piston airplanes with a capacity of 6 to 9 passengers, as well as single-engine turboprop airplanes currently in production. The company says the airplane will be a good fit for humanitarian, military, and search and rescue missions. In an interesting conflict, eVector, known in the U.S. for its LSAs, has chosen a name for its turboprop already used by an LSA imported by a different company. I wonder how many times the eVector sales reps will find themselves saying, "No, not that Outback. This is the big one." That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Aero TV senior producer Sarah Curtis gives us some insight into how and why we're streaming video from AEA 2010. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.